Mikkel, this is the start of season 3. Can you believe it? Oh my God.
It's crazy. It's been so fun. So fun. And how much have we learned?
I'm super smart now.
Thanks to everyone who's listened, given us feedback, asked us questions, made us smarter. We're doing this for you, and we're so honored that you're here with us.
And we're just getting started. Our community has been growing leaps and bounds, and we have so many amazing guests lined up for season 3. I just can't wait to get into it, starting with today's guest that I think, was it Dr. Jen Zalewitzki that introduced us?
She did. Thank you, Dr. Jen. We love you.
Yeah, this conversation, Mikkel, it completely rocked my world because, as you know, I've struggled with my weight my entire life, like always. And I always just thought that eating disorders were like anorexia or bulimia, those things in those, remember those after school specials?
We're so old. Yes, I do.
Yes,
I do,
that's what I thought it was. But during this episode, I realized that I've probably had disordered eating for decades, like my entire life, and I just never knew it. And our guest today, Kyla Fox, she's a master level clinician who's been treating eating disorders for 20 years. And she created this amazing place to help people across all spectrums of yo-yo dieting, negative body image, disordered eating, and eating disorders.
I think a lot of our community is going to have the same aha moment you did when they listened to this, because a lot of women in perimenopause, like you and I, gained weight overnight, started to panic, and we started getting restrictive with our food and or over exercising.
Or both, because that's what we did in our 20s, right?
Right. But okay, without giving too much of our conversation away, those restrictions and rituals are a form of disordered eating.
Yeah. So let's get into it. This episode is a two-parter. The first half you're listening to right now. The next half is going to drop next Wednesday, so stay tuned. Also, I had a construction crew in the house the day we recorded this, so there's some background noise, and please try to ignore it.
Getting vulnerable, dealing with the unexpected, realizing how we've been eating may not be so healthy after all. This is perimenopause.
Welcome to the show, Kyla. So excited to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. I'm so happy to talk to you both.
Yeah,
truly.
Well, I don't remember how we got introduced to you.
Dr. Jen.
Dr. Jen. Oh my gosh, God love her. But when we found out about you and what you did, and when we did some research, we were like, yes, like we have to have you on the podcast. Oh, it's such a fascinating story, and what you do is amazing and so well so much needed. And so we're so grateful. For our listeners who haven't met you before, can you please tell us a little bit about your background and how and why you created the center?
Yes. So I have been a clinical therapist now for 20 years. Is that crazy or
That's
what?
That's crazy.
Really? Isn't it 2 minutes?
Because you look like you're 30. So yes.
Okay.
Crazy.
20 years. So I've been practicing for 20 years, and I opened the center now almost 15 years ago. Now, the center came to me when I was in my private practice, and I was working with people in different kinds of ways and realizing that they needed treatment far beyond just their individual therapy with me. So I was doing things like seeing people very regularly and over meal times and trying to help them to be exposed to different ways of combating their relationship with food and their body and their rituals. And then I would just say to myself, like, there needs to be a place where, you know, I can help these people and lead in their care. And I understand this so well because I struggled with an eating disorder. And so I just got so tired of talking about a want to create something that I just created the center. And so the center is, in essence, we are an individualized treatment center that works with people across the entire spectrum of eating disorders, disordered eating, yo-yo dieting, negative body image. Wherever and if ever you fall into any part of that spectrum, we help you. And that means we do that also in a very individualized way. One of the things that I've come to understand so deeply when I think about eating disorders or disordered eating is that no two people suffer in the same way, because no two people have the same lives. And therefore no two people require the same treatment. You know, essentially we're kind of like treatment by design. We get to know them, we get to really understand them, and then we build care in a collaborative way with them, for them.
What do you mean by care?
We build a treatment plan with different forms of the work that we provide and offer that we feel and recommend will really support this person and why. So this is based on like the goals that we learn that people have, the ways that we start to understand how much they're suffering, when, why, all the rules and rituals that they might have around food in the body. We also really believe that people do so much better in making change when the people around them, the people that they love, are involved in the care, because there's a different level of accountability. Mm. There's a different level of connection and support and education and understanding around that person who's struggling. You know, I think sometimes when you're struggling with an eating disorder or disordered eating, like there's such a sense of aloneness and alienation and secrecy. And what I've seen over the 20 years of helping thousands and thousands of people is that when people around you are a part of the change, then you change differently because they also change. Because one of the things that happens with eating disorders is they're secretive and they're sneaky and they're manipulative. And I say this honestly because I had one. And so I know this is a thing that happens. They lie. They do all kinds of things. And so when we can catch them and see them and know them and recognize how they exist in our relationships and how they play out in different parts of our lives, then everyone around us is working to block that eating disorder out, not just the person who's struggling. And that's really, really key.
Right. And you're not wasting all of this precious energy trying to hide it from all of these other people who are trying to navigate it on your own. I can't even begin to imagine. When you said the word spectrum of eating disorders, Kyla, I immediately went to, oh yeah. And I wonder, you know, does anyone not fall on the spectrum in some way, especially, not to stereotype, but I think, is it true that women more so than men succumb to this type of challenge?
I think women predominantly are impacted on the spectrum, yeah, for sure. I think you ask a really important question around, is anyone really not on it? I mean, you know, we're all so inundated by diet culture and fitness culture and messages and images about what we should eat, what we should not eat, what we should look like, what we should not like. It's just so part of how we live in the world that we begin to feel like it's normal. And it's not. Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, I think maybe for our benefit, but also for our listeners, maybe we could delve into what an eating disorder is. Because I think, you know, unless someone has experienced it or has received treatment or knows someone who's experienced an eating disorder and had treatment, you know, I think people think, well, anorexia, bulimia, most people get that. But then it kind of falls off, right? And there's so much more to this based on the limited, you know, research that I've done. Maybe you could tell us, so what is an eating disorder?
So I think about eating disorders in a really different way. I don't think about them in the sort of categories that we often have come to understand them, like the ones that you named, like anorexia, bulimia, binge eating. I think when we think about eating disorders, we think about those categories of people suffering. And then there's ideas about what those people are doing and how they look based on those categories. Now, I really blow down all of those pieces. And I actually think about eating disorders very differently. I think about them in terms of symptoms. I think about them in terms of ideas of binge, purge, and restrict. These are three primary symptoms that people with eating disorders or disordered eating have. They have them in different ways. They have them in different practices. They have them for different reasons, but they move through these patterns of binge, purge, restrict in very unique ways to them. And often the trajectory of a person's experience in binge, purge, and restrict changes over time. So maybe someone might have been on this, you know, spectrum at one point and really was restricting food or restricting the volume of food or restricting certain categories of food. And then maybe they sort of swung into binging on food or purging on exercise and maybe kind of going back and forth with that. And then maybe coming back to restriction and then maybe swinging back into binge purge. What I'm trying to suggest, I think, is that nobody nicely fits into boxes of anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. People are always changing through the spectrum of binge, purge, and restrict. And I sometimes feel like these categories alienate people because they don't fit into these boxes, but yet they're suffering. And so I'm less interested in the labels and I'm more interested in how you feel controlled by patterns of binge, purge, and restrict. Why do you have to do these things with food in your body? What is it really about beyond food in the body? And then how can my team step in and start to support developing more thoughtfulness and regulation when it comes to food, when it comes to the body, but also to really help people get to those deeper root causes that those food patterns actually are rooted in. So what we think about at the center is that binge, purge, restrict shows up in food in the body, but it actually also shows up in life. It shapes the way that we live, which is then why it shows up in food in the body. Like maybe you've been like restricted of the love of a parent as an example, or maybe you have a really chaotic partnership, like binge, it feels messy and it takes over you, or, you know, like, we try to help people understand these ideas well beyond food and work there too, so that that can differently inform a relationship with food in the body.
Fascinating. And even as you're describing purge, until 2 minutes ago, purge in my mind was always about vomiting. But you said exercise purge.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. Sorry, I have bad, bad potty mouth.
Oh, so do I.
Good. Bring it on. It hadn't even occurred to me the type of purging.
But I remember doing this. I would eat. I would go out and eat. And then I would come home and I'd be like, well, I got to go on the treadmill. Like, or that little elliptical machine. Like,
so that is a symptom of compensation. And purge is the symptom of ridding yourself, starting over, clearing out the bad choices you've done. And purge, More than vomiting, shows up in exercise. And the reason why that's problematic and almost gets overlooked is because we live in a culture that normalizes over exercise, that has all of these, you know, meanings around what it means to be fit and exercise and all this stuff. But it is the most common purge symptom.
Can I just say, Kyla, like, and I have to be quiet because I've got a house full of people today, but my son, he knew he had a big weekend coming up. He knew he was going to be partying and doing all this stuff. He was on the treadmill for like over an hour in the morning. Like he got up and he went on the, like, cause, and he's recently lost like a bunch of weight. He looks fantastic. He looked fantastic before, but it's been really important to him. And he's been working on this for a few years. And hearing you say that, I'm like, fuck. I knew it was a problem. Like when he was doing it, I'm like, he's still on the treadmill. Something's wrong here. And now hearing you say this, I'm like, oh my gosh. So what do we do? Oh my God.
Well, I think what ends up happening, and this is where I think eating disorders are really important to consider, like symptoms don't start out with the intention of overtaking us. They actually kind of start out more innocently. And then slowly but surely, they start to take on more momentum. They start to take up more time and space in our lives. They start to sort of like catch on to us because maybe they bring us results. They start to become these very patterned and ritualized ways that we feel we have to keep living because, you know, as soon as we get those results, we feel like we want to hold on to them. So, and then they just grow and then they start to kind of, our lives starts to become built around them.
This is like fast.
fascinating to me, Kyla. And again, I knew when I kept hearing the treadmill going, I knew that like, and yet I, you know, as a parent, I grew up with like hearing you talk about the restrict, the binge and the purge. Like I grew up having to hide food from my mom. And so I would like, you know, squirrel away food in my bedroom, bring it to my bedroom. My sister and my mother were, quote unquote, had these, you know, great bodies for the time, the 80s. And I was always the pudgy one. And so my mom was very concerned about my appearance, of course, and in a loving way. But, you know, it was the 80s. Like it, she didn't mean she thought she was healthy, right? But now still to this day, I can go, I can have my meal. I don't have to have dessert or anything after dinner. Like I'm good after dinner. I'm great. But the moment he's away for the weekend, I'm like, oh, go get the chocolate, go get the jujubes and like mix them together because chocolate and jujubes are like insane together. But I wouldn't do that on a Monday to Friday night when he's around. It's just when he's gone that I'm like, okay.
But I think that's an interesting concept if we think about it. You know, people always want to talk about sort of the food pieces. And I think what you're saying there is that like you are in a state of where you have a life restriction, like your husband is gone. So there's restriction. And then in that space of restriction, you binge. It may not be quantitatively a binge in the way that we might understand it. It may be, but it may not be. But the essence of what it means to fill in a particular way in the space of restriction is part of what we need to understand about binge. So these are all, again, interesting rituals that people have, but you know, and they're so unique to each and every person. And frankly, I would argue that people probably have hundreds and hundreds of them. They don't even know it. I mean, this is what's so fascinating when we start at the center to be talking to people and illuminating these kinds of patterns. But it's also critical to think like, what is happening in our lives that actually then leads the action with the food? So what is actually happening in the space between you and your husband? What happens when you're alone?
I think it's more like back from when, like this, the whole thing, like no one's around, no one's around to see this. And now I can just relax and like, I don't know.
The secrecy, I think that's probably it. Like these ideas that happen.
Love what you're hearing? Don't miss our weekly newsletter. It's got expert advice, evidence-based resources, practical tips, and of course, a little humor.
Go to thisisperimenopause.com to subscribe and join the thousands of women who have realized they need and deserve better.
Okay, so Kyla, so one of the common complaints that we hear in our community is that many women in their late 30s, 40s, 50s wake up one day and they seem to have gained 10 pounds overnight. And they look in the mirror, they don't recognize themselves anymore. What used to work for them, the whole eat less, exercise more, it's not working anymore. Nothing is working. It's devastating. And it definitely impacts our relationship with food and our relationship with our bodies. And I'm speaking so passionately about this because this is definitely me. And yet I've never considered that I might have an eating disorder. So how do you define an eating disorder? And what's the difference between, like, I don't know, is there a difference between having a difficult relationship with food and actually having an eating disorder? Is there a line?
Yeah, it's probably in the same way that I feel that there's like a spectrum of symptoms or like the acuity of symptoms. I feel like there's probably a spectrum of whether or not you have disordered eating or eating disordered. And I think distinguishing them is challenging because a lot of people who are highly functioning with disordered eating patterns, you know, could maybe be deemed having eating disorders. But then also people might think that having an eating disorder means that like you can't function in the world and it takes over your life and you should be in a hospital. So I think there are a lot of ways to look at it. But at the end of the day, you know, I think it's maybe more important how you identify because some people just feel really scared to say they have an eating disorder, and that's okay. Like, I sometimes feel like labels can be important, and for some people they are, and I sometimes feel like for others they can be really alienating. So sometimes I like to just sort of throw the language away about whether it's an eating disorder or disordered eating. Like, we could call it like anything you want, but at the end of the day, if you are struggling and feeling preoccupied with food or your body, and it takes up time and space and energy, and you feel like you can't be in relationship with yourself, and you feel like it overtakes you, or you feel like you're missing time, or you feel like you can't focus on the things you want, or you feel like you can't go out with your friends for dinner because you're not able to eat those things, or you feel like, oh, I can't like get dressed in the morning, like, fuck, I hate my body, or like, it, like, you know, like, I recognize that as women in particular, we all have moments of this, experience of this, and that is normal. But the level of preoccupation or how that takes over your life or the impact that that has, I think then starts to shift in terms of it being, in terms of it maybe being more disordered or eating disordered. Does that make sense?
Fair. I think so.
It's hard, especially like if we go back to the piece of what you were saying about like women at this stage of life and you snap your fingers and overnight you feel like your body's changed. So one of the things that I think is really important to mention is like there is an uprise of women moving through perimenopause and menopause coming forward and saying like I have an eating disorder or that they're suffering with food in their body in their way, in ways they never did before. Now, what I would say about that is like, yes, that is true. There's no question, like medically speaking, that is a real thing, that our body does change during this time. We do gain weight. We do lose muscle mass. It is a real thing based on hormones. That is very true. And I also think that for all the years leading up to perimenopause and menopause, a lot of women have been using patterns of binge, purge, restrict to keep them safe in their bodies. And now those things don't work. Like you said, more women at this stage are like upping the ante. They're like, I'm going to exercise even more now. I'm going to eat even less now. And it's like, I used to be able to cut this out and then I'd fit into that dress. So it was always disordered. And now it's like through the roof because what you would have relied on before to help you feel safe in your body doesn't work anymore. So I think there's this thinking of like, now I have a problem. But I actually like to illuminate that these rules and rituals have existed long before now for most people. They just don't work anymore. Whereas before, you would maybe get the result you liked. So you would move yourself through the torture because you felt like it was quote unquote worth it and it worked. But it actually just, you went into that space and then you were sent back out and then you were back into that diet and then you were sent back out and you fit into that dress and then, oh shit, you didn't fit into that dress, but, right? So it never actually worked. And all that that has done for so many women is teach us that we can never have a safe and trusting relationship with food in our body because we're always yo-yoing. We can never, ever trust ourselves because we don't know what to do. And it sets us up now for this time in our life where we truly are changing physically. Like that's a real thing. And that we better damn well hate ourselves because of it. Because we always did before and we did anything possible to make sure we could correct it. And so now we just hate ourselves even more because we can't, quote unquote, fix it the same way. So I think there's like a lot of undoing.
Oh, this is heartbreaking right now. Like I'm listening to you and I'm seeing myself in your words or hearing, it's heartbreaking. So what do we do?
Yeah, it's a great question. Like I feel there's so, you know, I've been thinking about this so much because I've been talking a lot about like perimenopause and menopause and eating disorders. And it's like, I've been thinking about like, you know what is it that like when women go through these unbelievable like stages of development and transitional stages in life, like pregnancy, puberty to start, pregnancy, postpartum, perimenopause, menopause. These are like high times for eating disorders to develop. And it's so fascinating to me that these are like the most remarkable transitional times of a woman's life. And yet all we focus on is our bodies during this time. Like it's so painful and sad to think that we transition through puberty or pregnancy or fertility or postpartum or menopause. And all anyone wants to say about it is how we look or what our body should or shouldn't look like. Like, I mean, come on. There's like a way bigger problem if we can't start talking about and honoring all the things as women that we do, that we move through, that we become so far beyond what our body looks like, I feel like this is the greater problem, you know? And so then we end up in these stages of life and we're just stuck on what we look like or what we stop looking like. And our whole sense of worth and value is then built on our bodies or how old we're getting or how unattractive we're becoming or how attractive, like, you know, whatever it is, right? So I think, I mean, I'm going on a tangent, so I'm not going to say that anymore, but I feel like that's a really important like we have to give some recognition to that. And then I also feel like it is really hard for sure, especially in our society, to just allow your body to change and to accept that. Like, I don't want to pretend that we should have some kumbaya moment as women and just be like, we love our body. You know, like it just doesn't work. Like, I mean, that's not realistic. Like, it is very distressing if your body is changing and you don't know what to do about it. But I also feel like we've never even learned prior to now, prior to perimenopause and menopause, how to even be in relationship with our body. So of course it's going to feel so out of control right now. And there's a lot of work that I think women have to do far beyond, oh my God, how do I stop this? What do I need to eat differently? How much weight should I be lifting to build muscle, to change fat? Like, you know, I think we also need to ask ourselves, like, you know, have we confronted the things in our life? Have we addressed the things that have impacted us? What does it feel like that our kids don't need us in the same way anymore? And maybe we're, you know, changing our sort of value and role as mothers, or, you know, now we have to sort of really look at our partnership in a different way because our kids aren't in the way of that anymore. What does it mean that we're like super overworked, trying to manage kids, trying to manage aging parents, go, 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 can't stop, won't stop, all these things. And like, there's no time for ourselves. We're so exhausted. Mm-hmm. There's so much that I think we have to recognize, let alone all of our history that has shaped us, all of the things we've been through, loss, trauma. Like, it's so deep, our relationship with our body. It's so deep.
Let's just pause for a second and absorb that. Like, oh my gosh.
You know, and it's fascinating to me that we're here in this conversation quite early on, because I think this is something we've been circling for a while now, Michelle, in the context of, you know, the perimenopausal journey and the toolkit you need in order to go from surviving to thriving. And we keep bumping up against, oh, but wait a minute, we need to prioritize ourselves. Oh, but wait a minute, we need to understand, right, the mental aspect of what's going on, not just why the physiological symptoms are happening potentially because of hormone fluctuations and aging and et cetera. But what is it about who we are that's also driving what's going on? And how do you not just figure that out, but then be brave enough to make time to dig into that? It's scary. Is this kind of what you get at the center? I feel like,
yeah, I mean, I think this is it, right? It's like, I feel like when people make the decision to finally face the relationship with food in their body and to surrender to understanding that, they're finally making a decision when they're working with us at the center to face all of these deeper things in their lives and to make sense of them. Because I actually feel like that inadvertently helps us make sense of our relationship with food and our body. Like, when we can really get to the deeper pieces that I think most people spend most of their life avoiding, or pushing down, or restricting away from, or feeling like it's not a big deal, or I'm over that. And that's not to undermine like any previous therapeutic work that anyone has done. You know, like, I think it's important to remember that as we move through different stages of life, even if we've done some really good work in the past and we feel like, I got through that thing, sometimes the meaning of it changes when we change.
Wow. Okay. I need to pause here because my head is spinning a little bit.
Oh my God. I like listening to that. I just keep thinking all the ways I've restricted food over the years, thinking that I was being healthy. And
that whole thing about exercise purging, I had no idea that was even a thing.
Well, and then the secrecy thing, like, as I said in the episode, like, fuck, it hit home.
Yeah, there's so much more to unpack here. Next good news is next week we're diving into what to actually do about all of this, especially for those of us in perimenopause who feel like our bodies completely betrayed us.
Yeah, me. And also Kyla gets really, really vulnerable about her own story. And she talks about breaking these patterns with our kids, which I know I'm really worried about. I'm sure most of us are.
Part two drops next Wednesday, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it.
And if today's conversation hit home for you, maybe share it with someone who might need to hear it too.
We'll see you next week for part two with Kyla Fox.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review,
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical provider.